Joe, I think back to when we were at that meeting and showing that producer the coffee bag with their name on it.
Right.
And they literally come to tears.
Welcome to the Durango Joe's podcast, where we believe everyone deserves a smile, a warm greeting, and a great cup of coffee. I'm your host, Trevor Ogborn, and as always, I've got Joe Lloyd with me on the mic. Joe, how are you doing today?
Trevor, I'm doing awesome.
So for those of you guys joining us for the first time for this podcast, we've previously interviewed David Morris, CEO of Delano's Coffee Roasters. And Delano's is this company we have this really great relationship with. Joe, tell me a little bit more about Delano's.
Yeah, I think I told this story when we had the podcast with David, but Delano's became our coffee roaster, I believe in 2009. And since then, it's just been a great ride. And we've enjoyed, number one, their coffee, their service, and the relationship that we have with the people that work there.
One of those people is Phil Beatty, who serves as Delano's Director of Coffee. Basically, anything and everything that revolves around coffee itself, Phil has his hands on. He also serves as their green coffee buyer, meaning that he's the guy responsible for sourcing coffee as a raw product before it's roasted from all over the world. I had the pleasure of meeting Phil back in 2018 when I personally visited Delano's up in Sumner, Washington. And he and I had some really fantastic conversations that amplified my fascination with the coffee industry. Today, we've brought him on to talk to us about topics ranging from how Delano's sources and produces its award-winning coffee, what the relationships are like between Delano's and the coffee producers it works with, how the public's growing knowledge of coffee has springboarded its quality, and really so much more. Phil, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the mic today.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Tell me, for the sake of the audience, a little bit more in depth, what does Delano's do in terms of getting the coffee from seed to cup? What does that process look like, and why is that so important?
Yeah, I mean, what we do spans the globe, so we're kind of like the glue that's in the middle of the supply chain. So on one end of the supply chain, you have coffee producers and farmers that are putting all their efforts into having healthy trees and a healthy crop, and all the things that go into creating the flavor of a coffee. Sometimes I refer to that as the terroir of the coffee, to borrow a wine term. And then on the other end of the supply chain, you have people that are drinking a cup of coffee in the morning, and coffee shop owners like Joe. And in between, you have us trying to link those two together and make the producers have a successful, sustainable livelihood at their farm, and also provide the coffee drinker with something that they're enjoying and loving. And so at its core, that's really what we're doing, is linking the dots. And then obviously we have this incredible craft of roasting smack dab in the middle, where we're roasting coffees to unlock those flavors that were developed at the farm and provide our customers with something that, when they brew it properly, tastes incredible and hopefully gives somebody a memorable cup of coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, because you guys are an award-winning coffee roaster, you guys are a big name in this industry, especially in the United States. So what goes into producing award-winning coffee? What sets you apart from other companies that are kind of in the same space?
I've got an old quote that I always like to bring up, that the art of roasting is developing flavor and the science is repeating it. So the art is in unlocking unique flavors and in learning new things about coffee. The science is giving people exactly what they want over and over. There's two different coffee drinkers in the world, in my experience. So one coffee drinker goes to every cup of coffee and wants to experience something wild. They want to know different flavors. Maybe they want something that tastes like dark chocolate with hints of cigar, tobacco, and leather. And then the next cup of coffee they drink, it's pineapple and grapefruit and citrus notes and floral notes. And these coffees taste completely different. And so that is like the connoisseur coffee drinker that wants to experience everything that coffee has to offer. And that's kind of one type of coffee drinker. A second type of coffee drinker is the person who wants the same cup of coffee every day. It's part of their routine. They wake up, they need their cup of coffee to get them going, and they want that comfort of recognizable flavors that's consistent year in and year out every single day. And so my job is the difficult job of being able to procure coffees that are going to make both of those people happy, because both those people are coming into your coffee shop every day. One wants their, you know, their latte or their drip cup that's the consistent house blend, and another is saying, what do you got that's different for me today? So that's the big challenge of being a coffee roaster, is how do we satisfy both those people and keep everybody happy with the cup of coffee they're getting. And so our customers, just like Durango Joe's, you know, I remember Joe brought up when we first were trying to get his business years ago, you know, Joe and I sat there for, I think it was more than a month. He and I went back and forth on tasting, because Joe has a very, very particular palate and knows exactly what he wants his blends to taste like. And so it was a real challenge for me back then to sit down with Joe and say, okay, how do we want, you know, Mosaic to taste? And I would serve five different coffees and say, Joe, which one of these ones tastes most like what you imagine Mosaic tasting like? And then we'd narrow it down to the top one. And then we'd come back and I'd find five more that tasted just like that one. And so over time, you just narrow it down until you have exactly what that coffee should taste like based on Joe's taste and what he knows his customers are going to like. And then my job is to make sure that that tastes the same, so that 12 years later, Mosaic still tastes exactly like 12 years ago when Joe said, this is what I want this coffee to taste like. And so that's the challenge. It's like in Wizard of Oz, the wizard behind the curtain is like, how does this coffee 12 years later still taste exactly the same? Nobody really knows, but yeah. That all goes back to the roasting and the sourcing and the quality control measures and all the science that we use at the roaster to make sure that coffee tastes exactly the same.
Yeah. And I would say, Phil, I mean, you guys have it down. Yeah, it's a science, but I look at it as a real art. You guys are incredibly talented when it comes to, well, obviously tasting coffee. But the big word I'm looking for here is the consistency. Like you mentioned, 12 years later, it does taste the same, and you guys are consistent and you have the protocols and all the things in place to make sure that every customer you have gets exactly what they want at the end of the day. And that's real customer service. And that's what I've really enjoyed about our relationship, is that we do have the freedom, if I wanted to give you a call and go, hey, we're going to change up Joe's espresso. We're going to make it a little lighter, because right now it's a medium dark, and more people in this country are getting a little bit more coffee centric and they're liking lighter roast coffee. Right. And so a lot of the espresso that you put through your machines now are getting a little bit lighter, and that's what I want. So Phil would make that happen if I wanted to have that happen. And Phil, I'm making the announcement today that we may lighten our espresso roast coffee.
So I was just going to ask, is that the request? Is that formal?
That's the trend that's going on right now. I think a darker roast, you're going to get more bitterness and a little bit simpler flavor profile. With lighter roast, you end up getting more sweetness, more flavor characteristics. You know, you go really dark on a roast and you end up with some bitterness. You end up with a little bit of dark chocolate notes, but the complexity just isn't there. You know, you try some of these competition coffees that we have coming through our warehouse here, and they just blow your mind with it. As the coffee cools, you come back. One of these things I always tell people is drink a coffee all the way from the time it's hot till the time it's down to room temperature. If it's a really, truly good coffee and it was brewed correctly, even 2 hours later at room temperature, it's still going to taste good. Now, if you come back and it's room temperature and it tastes like an ashtray, then it's not good coffee. You might have liked it when it was hot, but that's because the heat was masking the real flavor of that coffee.
Right.
You gotta really pay attention to that coffee all the way through. And that's something that obviously your customers are doing, because they know good coffee.
Now I gotta ask, like, I know a ton of change happens with the roasting process and stuff like that, but how much of this starts all the way across the world with the producers, and what's your role coming alongside them to select the correct coffees and bring it across to us where we're able to enjoy it as well?
Hard to put a percentage on how much of what you're tasting in your cup of coffee is from the farm. Just, it depends on what that coffee is. But one thing's definitely true, and that's that the attention to detail that a producer puts into their picking only ripe cherry and processing the coffee meticulously. That all comes through. I can't take a coffee that was grown improperly or processed improperly and roast it and magically make it taste good. So it really is about those raw ingredients, and those are your color palette to make a great blend or make a great single origin. So I don't know the exact percentage, but it's a huge, huge part of that flavor in the cup. And so when we're roasting those coffees, we're trying to find the exact roast profile that is going to bring out all of the best that that coffee has to offer.
Phil, one of the most distinct coffees I've ever tasted is the Ethiopian. And I think it came from the Harar region, but it's got this famous kind of blueberry smell. Obviously, when you cut open that bag, you smell the blueberry and then you taste it. Now, how did that happen and why does it happen? Because you obviously don't put, flavoring in your coffee, but the coffee itself tastes so incredibly good and it has that flavor. How does that happen?
Yeah. One of the big misconceptions, I don't know who made up the word bean for coffee, hundreds of years ago, but whoever started calling it a bean was dead wrong. Coffee is a fruit. So it's the pit of a cherry. And so coffee can get all of these unique fruit flavors. It's not like refried beans. Okay. this is like really, really delicious fruit characters that can come out. And Ethiopia is the birthplace of all coffees. So if you went back in time 400 years, the only place in the entire world that you would find coffee growing naturally is in Ethiopia. And so they have all these heirloom varieties of coffee tree that are ancient, thousands of years this has been growing in the forests of Ethiopia. And they have these incredible flavor characteristics that everybody else in the world is just trying to recreate and hoping they can capture the magic of what Ethiopia, the birthplace of coffee, creates. And yeah, that Harar, I think, it's been a while because Ethiopia changed their supply chain. It's been harder to get that blueberry flavor, but it's those fruit characteristics in those heirloom varieties come out. And then obviously it's a processing thing too. So another thing they do is they dry the coffee with the cherry fully intact on it. And then when we roast it, it just caramelizes those sugars and brings all that fruitness out. So yeah, the Ethiopia is hands down always, you talk to any coffee expert and say, what's your favorite coffee? They're all going to give you this answer. They're going to say, and I say the same thing. Well, I love all coffees. And if you ask me any day, I'll have a different particular favorite. But year after year, always, always the default is Ethiopia, because that's the birthplace and that is where you will get the most unique, interesting flavors out of coffee.
You know, it's funny you say that. I just taught as a volunteer, a coffee knowledge class to a group out on the Front Range of adults with disabilities. And I was so proud of them. We had Red Mountain, we had Ethiopia and Mosaic. And out of the three, they all hands down just gravitated towards that Ethiopia. It was super fun to do that with them. But yeah, there's something so unique about that. Now, something you said though is you can't really take a coffee that's been misproduced or not processed correctly and suddenly fix it with the roasting process. So I want to learn from you a little bit more about the relationship side and how Delano's and you work with these farmers to ensure that you guys are sourcing only those best coffees and the ones that really highlight these flavors and characteristics that come through all the way to us.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a big, big part of my main role is going out, finding coffee farms and cooperatives that grow coffee and really find out, as I'm traveling to these farms, I'm essentially interviewing them to see if their core values line up with our core values. Because at the end of the day, every coffee farm produces all different spectrums of quality. A tree doesn't produce all ripe cherry just magically all at the same time. And so they're going through picking some unripe, some overripe, but their ability and their attention to detail to sort and process with the end customer in mind is what really defines how successful they'll be as a producer. And so once I find a producer that, like my friend Emilio, for example, in El Salvador, which Joe's been with me to his farm, he is so focused on details at every stage of the process. And similar to Delano's and Durango Joe's, he's also focused on leadership. He's focused on honesty and integrity. We think of those as core values that help us operate. If you're focused on integrity and honesty and leadership, that all the way through your entire culture, even at your suppliers and the, where they're growing, you can go to the guy who sweeps the patio at the farm in El Salvador, and you're going to find somebody who has honesty and integrity at Emilio's farm. So when I'm interviewing producers, I'm not just looking at, hey, what's the elevation here? Are the trees right? I'm looking at who are they and what makes them tick. Because if I can trust them as a person, then I know that we'll overcome any issues down the road that may be quality or process oriented. And that's a really, really important thing. And then the other thing is working on long-term relationships. So anybody can walk into a farm and say, hey, I got a bunch of cash. I want to buy your best coffee. And that's fine, but that's not a sustainable relationship. So sustainable relationships are built on longevity. We have relationships going all the way back to, I think our oldest is 2004. That's with Las Lajas down in Costa Rica, another farm that Joe's visited with me. And the Chacon family, I met them in 2004 at a convention in Guatemala. And we didn't even speak the same language. I had an interpreter that was kind of like giving me broken interpretations, but I could just tell from their vibe and their eye contact and the little bits of information they were giving me that these were people of integrity. And I was like, I got to work with these people, and I don't want to work with them right now, just for now. I want to work with them for years and years. And now it's to the point where their son, Oscar Jr., is growing up and he's going to college and he's got the spark and the fire for coffee. And now I'm chatting with their son talking about, you know, the future of coffee. So these really can turn into multi-generational relationships where everybody in that supply chain is thriving and excited and they're putting their passion into the product. And nobody wants to be involved in a supply chain where people hate their jobs or where they don't feel like they're getting the recognition for the work that they're doing. And so when I'm meeting with these producers, I'm interviewing them to see if they have our core values. And I'm also wanting to give them recognition and say, man, we appreciate the work you put in. Farming is not a glamorous job. And, you know, they need respect. They deserve respect for all the work that they're putting in. And so that's part of my role is saying, hey, you've got people up in the United States that love your coffee, that are drinking your coffee, and it gets them so excited. And it's my job to take that excitement and shine it back on the producer and say, hey, just so you know, there's thousands of cups of coffee that people are drinking, and those people love what you're doing at your farm. And that's a really rewarding part of what we do.
You know, to put this in context, I think, Phil, so our listeners can understand this if they're not in the coffee business or they don't know, these coffee farmers, these aren't huge farms. These aren't plantations of thousands of acres. Some of these farmers and producers that you deal with, like the Chacons, I can't remember, is it maybe 75 acres their farm is?
It's definitely not a giant estate by any stretch, yeah.
No, and so what I have seen is you guys actually, you know, you seek these farmers out, you find out that you can have a relationship with them. And then I think the coolest part is then you pay them a fair price for their coffee. And I've seen what that does to the farmer. It's like any of us in business, they get paid a fair price. What they start doing is they're advancing, you know, maybe in some technology stuff like running water, bathrooms, you know.
Yeah.
We take for granted all of that stuff. But I've seen farmers who get paid a fair wage and then they reinvest that money back into their farm or their housing so they can actually live, you know, because these are third world countries that we get this coffee from. And so they're very primitive in some ways. And so when we pay them a fair wage for their coffee, they can make some substantial advancements in their livelihood. And I've seen that. And it's because you guys actually care about that farmer that you pay them enough money in order for them to advance in their business.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm never going into a negotiation with producers and going, what's the cheapest I can possibly get this coffee for? That's not the way business can be done. And, you know, this age, we just have to be aware and responsible for people in the supply chain and know what's sustainable, know what's profitable. You brought up a great point of some of these producers have just a teeny little parcel of land. And, you know, a famous one is Guzman down in Peru at the Adisa Cooperative. And that's another one we've been working with. It's a 6-mile hike up a trail to get to his little parcel that he, you know, he staked his claim on it 20 years ago with his wife and said, this is where we're going to make our stand in life. You know, we take it for granted that we can, if we don't like the job we have, we're going to go hop to another job. You get out into the middle of the jungle in Peru, it's not like they can just decide they're going to do something different tomorrow. They have to make a real stake a claim and say, this is what I'm doing. This is what my family's doing. And they have to be all in. And so when I go visit them, I just want to recognize them for what they're doing and hopefully pay a price that allows them, as it has, to go see the doctor, go see a dentist, you know, go send your kid to school. The government paid, you know, free school, public schooling ends at like third grade. And so we all know education is the key to success in life. Like you have to be educated to be able to grow and become a bigger, better person. And so if we pay a fair price, suddenly Guzman's kids are able to go to school for a couple more years. And that's the difference between being stuck and not being able to achieve what they want and find happiness and being able to chase their dreams and be excited about what they're doing. Even if that's continuing to, on the farm and growing coffee, they're doing it not in a way that's like laboring under something they don't want to do. Now, if they're educated, they're like, how can I grow this and make it better? And so when you can start that positivity rolling forward through all of your interactions, that's when you see really cool things happening, like the, you know, the doctor visits, the education. Those are the core things that we can take for granted here in the United States. And it's definitely not a given when you go to some of these countries where they're growing coffee.
I'm so glad this came up because very often we are asked about the idea of fair trade. And we certainly do offer fair trade certified coffees at Durango Joe's. You guys have done a lot of work to build that as well. But we aren't able to say every single one of our coffees is fair trade. But we'd like to say that all of our coffee is responsibly sourced. And that's because we know the kind of relationship that you and that Delano's are building with us and on our behalf with the coffee suppliers and things like that. So it's just really cool to hear about what it takes to responsibly source coffee in a way that, again, like you said, feeds and gives back to the people that are producing it and honors what they do and the sacrifices they're making and really helps give them that leg up in life. I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fair trade is, first of all, I love fair trade certification. It's a great program. Just like organic certification, that's also a great program. And anytime somebody comes to me and they say, hey, I have to know 100% that this was sustainably sourced and grown and all that, then I say, then buy a fair trade organic certified coffee. That is the 100% way to know that there's a third party auditing the system. But that's not the only sustainable coffee in the world. You know, the Chacones in Costa Rica, as an estate, it's not even sustainable for them to try to achieve a fair trade certification. It doesn't make sense for them. You could go to Brazil, you literally can't grow coffee organically in Brazil. You know, remember we talked about how it originally was from Ethiopia? Coffee doesn't grow naturally in Brazil. So if you want to grow it in Brazil, you have to use fertilizers. That's not the end of the world. This coffee is still totally wonderful. They still hold reserves on their farm where they have natural nature reserves that are for the wildlife. So you can still grow in harmony with nature without being certified organic. So it's not a one size fits all. You're talking about a product that's grown all around the globe, and you have to take each case and measure all of the benefits for each. But I always come back to, hey, if it's really, really important to you that you know for sure that this coffee was grown sustainably and in harmony with the ecosystem, then just buy a fair trade organic coffee. That's one way to make sure. Obviously you guys have a ton of those, and it's really been an important part of your lineup, but it's not the only way to get great coffee. And that's what, when I'm meeting with producers, I'm looking, okay, what is the most sustainable way that we can get a great quality at the right price and have everybody in the supply chain being taken care of?
Phil, would you say one of the reasons why some of these farmers don't have certifications is because it's too expensive?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, with fair trade, first of all, that's usually reserved for cooperatives. So a cooperative is where you have a bunch of small producers, people that might be growing 100 or 200 pounds of coffee per year. And they all band together. And there's some cooperatives, that, for example, the Ethiopia that we carry, the Faro Ethiopia, it's a fair trade and organic certified coffee, has great floral notes, great fruit character. That cooperative has 25,000 members. 25,000 farmers that, wow, that grow that coffee. And so in that case, something like fair trade certification is great because they audit the politics of a cooperative and make sure the board is elected appropriately and that they're representing the producers. Some other farmers like Emilio in El Salvador, he has a family farm. It would make no sense for him to just start paying money to a third party certification like fair trade so that they can come in and tell him what, like how he should run his farm. It just doesn't make any sense for him. So it's not a one size fits all for coffee producers at all.
That's fascinating. So another question we had about the relationship with coffee farmers and things like that. Like you said, there's these two on our end, two types of consumers. The people that want their really consistent coffee every day, and then the people who want their kind of wild and exciting new coffees, a different experience with every cup. How do you, as a green buyer, work with producers and their commitments to make sure that you have access to these higher volume, really consistent coffees and things like that, while still offering these micro lots and these much more kind of niche coffees at the scale that you guys are operating? Especially.
Yeah. So really, really important when you're working with coffee producers as a green coffee buyer, it is not good or sustainable for me to walk into a farm and say, hey, I just want your micro lot. I want your special, you know, anaerobic fermentation, 92 point grapefruit coffee. You know, I only want that. That's not representative of everything grown on their coffee farm. And so as a responsible buyer, I'm coming in saying, hey, let's build a container of coffee. Let's start with our foundation, which is maybe it's just a coffee that's simply balanced, well-rounded, has some milk chocolate notes. It's a 84 point scoring coffee. Let's fill up half the container with that. And I can use that in my blend for consistency. Then let's throw in some other coffee that's for our, what we call our one harvest line, which this is coffee that's sustainable, it's traceable, it's sold as a single origin, and maybe that one's an 86 point coffee. And then for this last little sliver of the container, go ahead and give me some of that really expensive, exotic, experimental coffee that you're working on. And maybe I'll get a few hundred pounds of that coffee. And that coffee is the wow factor. You might love it, you might hate it, but it's gonna make you go wow. And so that's how I try to work on these relationships and build containers with producers so that we're buying from all of their different categories. And then that makes me a valuable customer to them, not just somebody who's trying to, pardon the pun, but cherry pick only the best stuff.
Oh, totally.
One of probably my most fascinating moments, I believe it was in Colombia, and you and I and a couple of farmers were talking, and we had an interpreter, and we were sitting at a table, and you had a really cool conversation with them, and you were completely transparent about pricing and about me, who was the retailer. And one of the guys had never seen somebody who actually was handing that product that they grew off to a customer as a cup of coffee. And so they met me for the first time. That was the first time they had ever met a retailer at the end of the chain. It was almost emotional in a sense, because for me to see that conversation take place and to see how transparent you were and honest, it kind of blew me away, but it gave me more faith in what you guys do and how you run your business. And it made me proud to be on this end of it, selling coffee that I know is responsibly sourced, and it's, and we're paying the farmer the right price for it, a fair price. And so, yeah, kudos to you guys. And I know it's kind of all comes from the top down, but you are at the top and you are doing the right thing. And I don't tell that story. I don't think Durango Joe's doesn't tell that story well enough. And I need to do a better job at telling the story of where our coffee comes from. We try, but you know, I need to do a better job of that.
So great to hear you say that, Joe. Thank you. And I think the story of coffee is really hard to tell. It's such a hard story to convey to somebody, because you've got a matter of seconds to tell a customer a story about a product that's been developed over the last 400 years. How do you tell the life story of this producer in Costa Rica over 2 seconds when you hand them their cup of coffee? It's really, really hard, but we do owe it to the producer to do that. It's one of the reasons why, you know, with our single origins, we put the name of the farm and we put the name of the farmer in that information. And Joe, I think back to when we were at that meeting and showing that producer the coffee bag with their name on it.
Right.
And they literally come to tears. I mean, it's so impactful to have something that, you know, some of these farmers, they're third generation coffee farmer, and to see the name of their farm on a bag getting recognition for the work is life changing. And they haven't gotten this recognition before. They haven't been recognized for the name of their farm, the name of their family, and the amount of work that they've put into creating that coffee. And so to see them grab that bag and see the name of their farm on a product that they know is going across all of the United States, it's so impactful. I mean, imagine if your job was just one where you sat there and, you know, worked all year long slaving on the earth to get it tilled and pruning. And this is hard work, hard farming work. And you see all your work drive down the road in a truck, in a semi, and you never get any recognition for what you did. Your family doesn't get recognition for their generations of knowledge. It's tragic. And so to be able to put their coffee farm name onto a bag, it to us, it might just seem like marketing, but to them, it's respect.
Yeah.
It's about showing them respect for the amount of work that they put in and the knowledge that their family for generations has. It's such a magical moment. It's really, really amazing.
So, Phil, you obviously have such a cool and interesting job with everything that you're doing, all these relationships you're building, the coffee you're tasting and stuff like that. So you've got a lot of moving parts. I have to ask, what are you most excited about in the industry? What gets you the most jazzed? And how are you guys staying ahead of the curve as the trends are shifting and consumer tastes are adjusting?
I've got to say, I'm most excited about the impact, whether it's social media or YouTube or anything. In the last 5 years, the knowledge of the average person of how to brew coffee and how to make a coffee taste really good has skyrocketed. I mean, people understand that grind is important and that weighing your coffee, you know, so all of this magic we talk about how amazing this coffee tastes is completely worthless if it gets brewed wrong and it doesn't taste good, or if the coffee gets left open and stales. So I just love seeing the increase in knowledge of just the population generally on how a great coffee can taste. And we stay on top of that by engaging in industry competitions, by sourcing our micro lots and really pushing the limits on what coffee can taste like. And those are two areas that really excite me right now. But at the end of the day, it's about tasting a great cup of coffee that makes your heart swell, knowing it comes from a good place, and makes you excited about incredible flavors that you taste in it.
Hey, Phil, tell us about a couple coffees here that I've tasted recently that have blown me away, okay? And it's the Whiskey Rio and the Kaleidoscope. They're phenomenal. They blow me away. I couldn't believe them after I tasted it. I'm in love with them both. Why? What's up with these two?
I'm glad you brought these up. The Whiskey Rio is one of my favorite projects it's a little bit out of the box for coffee. You know, I'm kind of a coffee purist, as you can imagine, and I want my coffee black and I want it just by itself with no other additives. But the Whiskey Rio was a super fun project where we took the unroasted green coffee, hung it inside a whiskey barrel, kind of like a beehive hanging inside, and all of that aroma infused it. And we do this every November through Christmas. We launch this coffee and it has just so much insane whiskey aroma. We use the coffee from Guatemala, so we call it Whiskey Rio. And if you like whiskey, you will absolutely love this coffee. The other one you mentioned, the Kaleidoscope, we named this one Kaleidoscope. It's one of our micro lots. We only had like 150 pounds of it total. And it was from an experimental process in Colombia called anaerobic fermentation. And so it's where they take the cherries, they seal it without oxygen. Because there's no oxygen, you end up with anaerobic fermentation, which creates lactic acid, which creates all these wild flavors in this coffee. And that coffee is just so, so laborious. So much labor goes into carefully processing it. And when we get that coffee in, I named it Kaleidoscope because it has an insane, wild variance of flavor. I mean, one second it tastes like white floral champagne. The next second it tastes like rhubarb and cherry pie. The next second you've got like super tart finish. It just insane, like a kaleidoscope. You turn the kaleidoscope and everything changes as you look through it. Well, that's how every time you take a sip of this coffee, you're going to get different flavor characteristics out of it. It's not for everyone, but the people who do like it, like Joe, you loved it. It just blows your mind. Like, what am I tasting in this cup? This is not coffee.
I have to ask, who's driving these changes? Who do you think is in the driver's seat when it turns to this? Because you talk about this kind of democratization of brewing knowledge and how the general populace has kind of elevated its understanding of coffee. So do you see a lot of these demands for these wild and exciting coffees coming from the consumers? Or who's in the driver's seat in this? Is it the producers who are experimenting on these new methods and sending them over for us to try? I'd love to know.
Oh man, that's, now you're talking economics. I don't know anything about that. No, but I think it's a combination. For sure, consumers are looking for something new and unique. Producers are looking for a way to create something that gets them recognition as a producer. And then obviously there's the competition circuit, the barista competitions, the brewing competitions, the roasting competitions. Those are, anytime you add competition into it, you're going to really start pushing the limits on what's capable and what's acceptable. And, you know, it used to be that a tart, sour coffee was unacceptable, but they said the same thing in beer. And all of a sudden everybody wanted sour beers. So I think a lot of those things in favor where you see natural wines, sour beers, the same exact thing is happening in coffee where we want to see how unique we can make this coffee taste. So I think a lot of that stuff starts with competitions where, you know, you taste, at a competition, you've got 25 coffees set up. How are you going to make yours stand out and be different? You've got to capture something that's very sparkling, that really grabs your attention, grabs the judge's attention. And I think you see that happening in beer, you see that happening in wine, and the same thing's happening in coffee. So competition drives innovation. I think that's true in any setting.
That's awesome. Well, I think we only scratched the surface on some of the stuff we were hoping to get to today. So Phil, I hope we're able to have you on again soon. This was such a pleasure, and thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thank you guys. I can't wait to get back on and geek out on coffee with you more.
All right, Phil, thanks for being on with us today. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Durango Joe's podcast, and a special thanks to Phil Beatty for sharing his passion and time with us as well. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the Durango Joe's podcast anywhere you'd like to listen, and you can follow us on Facebook so you don't miss another episode. Just put Durango Joe's podcast into the search bar. The Durango Joe's podcast is published by Durango Joe's Coffee. It's hosted by Joe Lloyd and Trevor Ogborn. That's me. I write, edit, and produce these episodes through my business, Brewed Up, which specializes in helping coffee businesses get clear on their brand, content strategy, and communications. You can find out more about that at the link in the show notes. Next week, we'll be sharing another episode of At the End of the Day, the other podcast from Durango Joe's Coffee, where Joe shares his timely insights in 5 minutes or less. Until then, Durango Joe's. Love people, love coffee.